Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. Welcome back to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley, and today we're tackling one of the most talked about topics in modern medicine, that's GLP-1 receptor antagonists. Now, you've probably heard very popular names like Ozempic, Wegovy, Zepbound. Maybe you've even seen headlines about dramatic weight loss, celebrity endorsements, and even supply shortages. But here's what you might not understand is that according to 2025 research, about 12% of American adults have now at least used these medications to some degree, yet up to 65% stop taking them within the first year. So what's really going on here on the front of GLP-1s? Are these miracle drugs that some claim them to be? What does the latest scientific literature and research tell us about their benefits, the risks, and why are so many people choosing to discontinue using them? So today, I'm going to try to give you a complete understanding of GLP-1 drugs from the ground up, from the research that I've done, looking in through stuff online and trying to find out as much information as I could. Because I'll be honest, I've not used a GLP-1 drug. I actually only know of a couple people that have, I'll say, dabbled in them. Again, they're not continuing to use them. I know it is somewhat controversial of a topic right now, whether it's being considered a shortcut or whether what are the long-term health benefits. We're going to kind of just dive into all this and everything that I happen to find here while doing this research. And so first, I really kind of want to start with just the basic science and explore the health benefits the researchers are discovering and honestly examine the challenges and the side effects and then make you understand what the research actually says about who might benefit from these medications. So whether you're curious about the drugs for yourself, family member, a client, or you just want to understand one of the most biggest medical stories probably of our time, this episode is going to give you some comprehensive science-based aspect of GLP-1s that you're looking for and maybe even can reference or even pass on to somebody else. So let's start from the foundation first, really understanding what GLP-1 drugs are and what GLP-1 actually is in your body. So GLP-1 stands for glucagon-like peptide 1, and it's a hormone that your small intestine naturally produces when you eat. So think of this as your body's sophisticated meal management system. So when food hits your intestines, they release this hormone to coordinate several important responses. So response number one is that GLP-1 tells your pancreas to release insulin, but only when your blood sugar is elevated. So this is brilliant because what it means is that you get help managing good blood sugar without the risk of dangerous low blood sugar episodes that can happen with some other diabetic-based medications. Number two, it blocks the release of glucagon, another hormone that raises blood sugar. So you're getting a double benefit from the blood sugar control. Thirdly, this is where things really start to get interesting. GLP-1 slow down how quickly your stomach empties. So this means the food is actually moving through your digestive system even more slowly, which helps prevent blood sugar spikes and also makes you feel fuller longer. Fourthly, GLP-1s act on your brain, specifically areas that control hunger and satiation. And it's literally communicating with your brain to say, hey, we've had enough food. You can stop eating now. Now, here's kind of the challenge that scientists have faced. So natural GLP-1 in your body, breaks down very quickly, and it's estimated in just a couple of minutes. So you can't just inject natural GLP-1 as a medication because it wouldn't last long enough to be useful, at least in the context that we're talking about now with GLP-1s and how it's being medicated and prescribed. So the breakthrough came when these researchers figured out that they could create a synthetic version of it that can last much longer in your body. So the first GLP-1 agonist was approved by the FDA back in 2005, but these medications really took off in the past few years as newer, more effective versions have now become available. So let's kind of talk about what the current landscape looks like. So today we have several different GLP-1 medications available. Some you inject daily, others weekly. Some are specifically approved for diabetes, others for weight loss, and some for both. Brand names that you're probably familiar with are Ozempic and Wegovy, and they both contain semaglutide. There's also Zepbound, which contains tirzepatide, and others are also out there as well. So something that we crucially need to understand here, though, is that while something like Zepbound, so the tirzepatide, is often grouped with GLP-1 drugs, it's actually what we call a dual agonist. And it activates both GLP-1 receptors and GIP receptors, which may explain why it often shows even more dramatic effects. So now that we've kind of got that very basic science down, again, not a scientist, so I'm just kind of reading the information here that I've kind of dug up to provide that with you, because again, I'm still learning about this myself as well. Let's kind of talk about what the researchers found about the remarkable benefits that these medications can provide. So when most people think about the GLP-1 drugs, they think about weight loss. And while the weight loss effects are impressive, being a health, fitness, strength and conditioning podcast and individual, that's kind of where I always see it mentioned and used, right? I mean, even having people ask me about what I think about it and whether I think they should take it, and we can talk about that a little bit later. But what seems to be emerging from the most latest research is that these medications actually have other health benefits that go beyond what they actually expected from just the weight loss side of things. So let's just start blatantly with what we know best about it, and that is the weight loss. And in clinical trials, people are taking Wegovy, semaglutide, tend to lose on average of 12 to 15% of their body weight over 68 weeks. For tirzepatide or something like Zepbound, the numbers are even higher, up to 22% of body weight loss in trials. So to put this in perspective, talk about a 200-pound individual losing 25 to 45 pounds. These are numbers that we typically only see with like bariatric surgery before these medications clearly became available. And obviously with very hard work on the diet, nutrition, exercise, and quality of health work, then sleep and stress management, maybe even managing hormones as well if we happen to have something going on the hormonal front. But what researchers are really excited about is that the newer medications in development, like retatrutide, a triple agonist, are showing even more dramatic results, up to 24% weight loss in early trials. So here's where we get even some more interesting information from the medical perspective, is that major studies published in 2024, 2025 have even shown that GLP-1 drugs provide significant cardiovascular benefits that appear to be independent of the weight loss. So the SELECT trial, which looked at people with obesity and established heart disease, found that the semaglutide reduced the risk of major cardiovascular events like heart attacks, strokes, and cardiovascular death by 20 to 25%. It was so significant that the FDA approved Wegovy specifically for reducing cardiovascular risk in this population. So they weren't even approving it for the weight loss, just for tackling cardiovascular issues. And what seems to be pretty remarkable is that these benefits seem to be regardless of how much weight the people actually lose. So it's independent of the weight loss. Now, the weight loss is clearly going to be another positive benefit, right? Decreasing your fat mass is always going to be a positive health benefit of any kind of diet nutrition changes that you might be making, but clearly the medication is doing more than just that. So it suggests that the medications are doing something directly beneficial for heart health beyond just the weight loss effect itself. Now, for people with type 2 diabetes, GLP-1 drugs excel at their original job that they were kind of designing for, that they can lower the A1C. So if you don't know what A1C is, it's basically the key measure of your blood sugar control, by 1 to 2% by 1 to 2 percentage points, which is clinically very significant. And unlike some other diabetes medications, they don't cause hypoglycemia when used alone or with metformin. So that's also another huge plus for the diabetic population. Now, recently this year, at the beginning of this year in January of 2025, the FDA approved semaglutide specifically for protecting kidney function in people with diabetes and chronic kidney disease as well. So it makes it the first GLP-1 drug approved specifically just for kidney protection. And the research tends to show that these medications can slow the progression of kidney disease and reduce the risk of kidney failure. So we're talking about multiple major organs of the body that can see benefit from some of these medications. Now, there's also even more benefit, and that's on the brain health and function. So a comprehensive study published in Nature Medicine in early again of this year, 2025, they looked at 175 different health outcomes and over 200,000 people taking GLP-1 medications. And so here are some of the things that they happened to find in those medications. It reduced the risk of seizures and epilepsy. Reduced the risk of addiction to alcohol, opioids, cannabis, and other stimulants. It reduced suicidal thoughts and self-harm behavior. It reduced eating disorders like bulimia. It also reduced psychotic disorders, including schizophrenia, and reduced neurocognitive disorders like Alzheimer's and dementia. So we're talking about a lot of really big mental positive benefits here. And so the researchers think that this happens because the GLP-1 receptors exist throughout the brain, particularly in areas involved in impulse control, reward processing, and addiction. So these medications may literally be helping to rewire how our brains respond to various substances and behaviors, as well as all the other added benefits that we've kind of already talked about. Now, in 2024, tirzepatide was approved for treating moderate to severe sleep apnea in obese adults. And the medication can significantly reduce sleep apnea episodes, which makes these given strong connection between weight and sleep apnea severity. So I think if you've been in the fitness, strength and conditioning space, powerlifting world, you know that the heavier individuals tend to struggle from sleep apnea. Some of that is the weight, some of that is the muscle mass, and some of that comes down to the neck size and the traps. You know, just putting all this actual physical tissue up by what's important to help us sleep in our larynx area does make it hard to sleep as that falls onto our side. And that can then cause issues when it comes to getting quality sleep. And that can obviously stem into many of other issues with hormones and weight gain and, you know, being tired and energy drink consumption. It just leads to a whole host of things. And so sleep apnea in the bigger individuals and powerlifting, strength conditioning has been prevalent. And we know that using CPAPs and addressing that immediately helps not only recovery, but all those other things as well. But the research is also showing benefits for metabolic liver disease, also called fatty liver disease. The medications appear to help reduce liver fat and inflammation, potentially slowing progression to more serious liver problems as well. So, I mean, you're talking about some major, major issues, health issues that we're having to see now and, you know, now 2025, that we're having to find a medication that's helping with a lot of severe health issues that can really improve the quality of your life if they are addressed appropriately. So I do think it is, however, that we put these benefits into perspective. And while the range of benefits is obviously impressive, I mean, if I told you that there was a drug that could do all this, man, sign me up, especially if you happen to have multiple issues of these. But most individual benefits represent about 10 to 20% reduction in the risk. So that's meaningful, especially for conditions where we don't have many effective treatments, but it's not a cure-all be-all, okay? It's not just taking this one medication and, hey, you're good to go. So as one researcher has even put it, that these medications may be most beneficial when combined with other interventions like lifestyle changes and additional treatments rather than just the standalone solutions. So we've seen impressive range of benefits clearly, but no medication is obviously without its downsides. So let's kind of talk about what the challenges and the risks might be of these medications. So First of all, if GLP-1 drugs were perfect, we would not see 50 to 65% of people discontinue them within a year. Those are the statistics as of right now. And so what's driving these high discontinuation rates, and what risks should people be aware of? If you have me talking about clients or, you know, family members, they're thinking about saying, oh, I'm thinking about jumping on the Ozempic, right? What are the risks there? And if there's, you know, over 50% of the people are quitting after a year, you know, is this by their own choice, or is there something going on with the medication that is giving them some kind of issue? So, like I said, let's kind of start with that statistic that according to 2024 and 2025 studies, between 46.5 and 64.8% of people stopped taking GLP-1 medications within the first year. For people without diabetes, the discontinuation rate is even higher than those with the diabetes. So research from Northwestern Medicine has called these quote unquote staggeringly high discontinuation rates, and that should quote unquote raise alarms for clinicians and policymakers. So what's going on here? Let's kind of dive a little deeper onto this. The most common reason people are stopping these medications is gastrointestinal or GI side effects. So things like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation. These aren't rare. They affect 40 to 70% of people taking GLP-1 drugs, depending upon the one that you're on. And I'll be the first to tell you that the two or three people that I've talked to that have told me that they've taken it, people that have been overweight, they were not people that were actually currently in the gym. This was kind of like step number one. I will tell you that all three of them voiced these concerns to me as well, that the way that they felt, they were either throwing up or they had diarrhea, or just the nausea was so bad that it made it hard to, you know, make it an enjoyable day. And all three of those people are currently no longer on the medication that they were on. I don't know which brand of GLP-1 or what exact medication they were on. I do know one person's, but that's from what I've seen firsthand. So I've not been around a lot of people, but the three that I can name, I can tell you that is the experience that they have had as well. So in a 2025 survey of patients who discontinued the GLP-1 medication, 64% said, quote unquote, made me feel sick, and 45% said they, quote unquote, made me throw up. So these side effects are often most severe when starting the medication or increasing the dosage. So the good news is, though, that for many people, these side effects improve over time as the body adjusts. As you would think with many medications, usually the initial side effects are kind of the worst. Not that I'm saying that's okay, but that's not uncommon from a medication side, especially if you're starting something new and something drastically different for your body. So the medications are typically started at low doses and they gradually increase to help minimize these problems. But for some people, the side effects are still pretty intolerable. And to give you an idea, I know that in my family, there was a medication that my wife tried to take for several different things. One of them even being cancer. And there were some that we had to discontinue just because even at the minimum effective dose that they could give her, the side effects just did not make sense from the, you know, the benefits, right? You know, you want to come out of this with a net positive. And if the side effects are worse than the initial issue that you had, it really makes you question whether you should even take the medication. And so I can see how somebody taking these medications, you know, they probably already don't feel good, at least in terms of their health and wellness and their body composition, and maybe just doing things from a day-to-day perspective. And then you add in throwing up or diarrhea or, you know, constant nausea into the equation, and you're thinking this is going to try to help improve your health, and here you are feeling like shit. So I can completely understand how that could be something that you could run into, and how people are wanting to get off those medications because of that, right? They're in a tough situation there. And so the next thing I kind of want to talk here about is the quote unquote Ozempic face. I'm sure we've all kind of seen this in social media. So the Ozempic face refers to the facial changes that happen with rapid weight loss, primarily loss of the facial fat. And then that makes people look older, or, you know, their face looks a little sunken in. It's important to understand this isn't specific to GLP-1 drugs. It can happen with any kind of rapid weight loss. So anytime you lose weight quickly, your body doesn't have like this time to like quickly adapt or gradually adapt. I'm sorry. You know, it's quickly just losing body fat, especially if you're in a calorie deficit and the medications are also doing their jobs. So the faster the weight loss, the more noticeable the changes are. That's pretty common for most people. We see people see massive weight losses early, just any intervention. It's a very common thing, but the Ozempic face, quote unquote Ozempic face, is making that seem a little more prevalent. So the changes obviously resolve over time. Some people, I guess, at least according to this one, I found some people are even considering now facial cosmetic procedures to deal with it. I mean, I guess if you're severely overweight, like we're talking 100, 150 pounds overweight or more, then I can definitely see that. But, you know, that's their own choice. But something to also consider as well of, you know, a potential pitfall is that, you know, what's going to happen from a body perspective, and will you have body dysmorphia, and will that make you take cosmetic changes that maybe you don't have to have, but you're feeling pressure? Those are all real things as well. So we really need to talk about the more serious and potential risks, though. And while they are rare, I do think it's important that they're at least brought up and we actually do talk about them. And so the first one is going to be pancreatitis, which is just the inflammation of your pancreas. And that's been reported with the GLP-1s. Multiple large studies haven't established a clear causal relationship. People with diabetes and obesity already have higher risk of pancreatitis, making it difficult to determine if the medications are actually causing the problem. Another one is gastroparesis, which is a condition where the stomach empties very slowly or stops emptying altogether. And this is more serious than the normal, like, slowing of your digestion that the medications cause. And while it is very rare, it can require stopping the medication and the medical intervention as well. And there have even been reports of acute kidney injury, primarily due to severe dehydration from nausea and vomiting. So this clearly tells us that the importance of staying well hydrated and seeking medical attention if your side effects become too severe should be of utmost importance, whether it be you taking the medication or somebody you know. I think hydration is always important, but definitely on these medications, it can be even more important on that front. Another big elephant in the room that we need to talk about is the cost. And so these medications can be pricey. And these medications can cost $1,000 or more per month without insurance coverage. And with insurance, copays can still be pretty substantial. So research shows that people are paying more than $60 per month have significantly higher discontinuation rates than those with lower costs. Interesting, though, those paying over $100 per month sometimes stick with the treatment longer, and they think that's because the psychological investment is what's keeping them involved, right? If they're seeing that I'm paying all this money, I need to stick it out. So it goes with any kind of like business front, is that if you offer something really cheap, yes, you might get a lot of people to start, but it's also very easy for them to quit. So usually retention is much higher. Well, or if you have a service that is more expensive, while it's a slower trickle in of people starting a program or starting a business service or investing in that product, chances are they're going to stick with that longer because they're actually invested in it, right? They begin to put value into something. And so they think stepping away from that costs more than the actual money they're paying. So you got to make them appreciate that value as well. But you know, these medications are kind of no different, that those that are getting them incredibly cheap, it's much easier for them to just discontinue them because they're like, it was only $50 a month. Like, it's not that big of a deal. I'm not that invested into it. So insurance coverages are obviously going to vary with the insurance world today. Many plans can cover the medications for diabetes, but not for weight loss. So something to consider. And even though they're the same drugs at different doses. So they're going to kind of look at this from a perspective of, is this a health intervention? And, you know, in my opinion, wanting to lose weight, and we know the strain of obesity has on our healthcare system, especially here in America, is that it leads to a host of problems elsewhere in terms of cardiovascular disease and diabetes and whatever. Now, clearly diabetes is covered, but if you don't have diabetes, and let's just say you're 30 pounds overweight, right? And you don't have diabetes, you're not even pre-diabetic, but you're wanting help to get that weight off, your insurance coverage very well may not cover that. So that's a thing worth considering there as well. Another issue as well that I came across that I wasn't as aware of, I had heard about it a little bit in the news, but I kind of brushed it off. It's been a while. But medication shortages have obviously been a real problem as well. especially in 2023 and 2024. And so when people can't access their medication consistently, they're more likely to obviously discontinue their medication and treatment entirely as well. And so the data shows clear spikes in discontinuation rates during periods of supply shortages. Doesn't really surprise me there. That's kind of a no-brainer. But when something has a very high demand like this, and it is relatively newer, you know, trying to keep it quote unquote on the shelves is going to be much more of a challenge. Now with different, it seems like there's much more brands out there making it. So I think it's probably a little bit easier to come by nowadays in 2025. But from the previous research from a couple years ago, this was obviously a very, very high demand and things were so new that there were just not as many options to choose from. Another aspect of the discontinuation side, though, is that one interesting finding from some research is that many people discontinue these medications after reaching their weight loss goals, treating them more like a temporary intervention rather than a long-term treatment. And so this clearly creates a significant challenge because the weight gain regain is common after stopping GLP-1 medications. The drugs don't permanently reset your metabolism or appetite regulation. So when you stop, many of the biological drives towards weight regain return. And so I think the important thing here is that if you, and this is where I'm going to kind of get into some personal aspects, is that I am not against GLP-1s, especially if it gets people moving in the right direction and gets them, you know, thinking about their health and gets them healthier and decreases their risk of their diabetes and their cardiovascular issues. And it, you know, it's having the brain health benefits and kidney health benefits. Like, these are all amazing things that can help people's health. And I think that's incredibly important. However, it's kind of one of those things where, like, if this is the only intervention that you're going to take, is it an intervention that you're willing to take the rest of your life? Because again, going back to this, you stop taking the GLP-1 medication and nothing else has changed, right? You've not worked on your nutritional habits. You've not worked on your physical activity. You've not worked on your quality of sleep, your hydration, right? Your stress management. If you've not addressed any of those other things and you are literally just taking the GLP-1 for that initial weight loss, your success is going to be much less than those that are actually making lifestyle changes along with the GLP-1, right? We talked about in the last episode or two episodes ago, I can't remember now from this recording, about 75 hard and how that wasn't, again, not necessarily about the weight loss. It's about the psychological piece of that program and then how that carries over into the weight loss. So you really want to make sure that if this is something that you're interested in taking or you are currently on it or you know somebody on it, if they're in it from the weight loss perspective, again, I applaud that. I have nothing against that. But we should try to also double down and work on trying to improve our lifestyle factors at the same time. So let's kind of talk about who's the most likely to discontinue. And the research has identified some patterns. And so let's talk about those. So the first one is younger adults, which is they have grouped as ages 18 to 34 discontinue more frequently than older adults. People without diabetes also discontinue more often than those with diabetes. So again, they've got that driving factor. They want to get rid of their diabetes. So mainly looking at the weight loss versus the diabetes side for the most part there. And those prescribed by specialists in obesity medicine tend to persist longer than those prescribed by other types of doctors. So what I took from this point was those that are seeking, again, the lifestyle help that's going to help them with their obesity from probably a food and nutrition management and also a physical activity perspective, clearly tend to last longer, again, because they're building up those quality lifestyle habits. And then lastly, people who don't see early weight loss results are also more likely to stop. I mean, that one kind of seems to make sense. You're investing this money, you're taking this medication, you might be having these side effects. You're in it to lose some weight. You might see 5 pounds, but you got a friend that dropped 20. You start comparing, you're like, well, why wouldn't that mean? Again, with medications and individual differences, everybody's going to react differently. And so this is one of those things where you've got to, I don't want to say buy in for the long haul, but you do have to make a longer term commitment on medication like this. This is not going to be a 1 month, 2 month thing that's going to immediately help you drop 15 to 20 pounds and then you just stop off on it and that 15, 20 pounds is going to stay off the rest of your life and you carry on. That is not the type of person that these medications are for. And so I think if we can pinpoint the people that are doing their things, I think it will make it easier to have more success with these medications. Let's talk about some of the risk-benefit considerations. So this is kind of really where I would say most people, when we talk about GLP-1s or you're seeing stuff online about them, this is kind of the headbutt that we're starting to see here. And for most people, the benefits of the GLP-1 medication significantly outweigh the risks. That's just the flat out truth. The benefits seem to give it a net positive when we start factoring in any kind of risks. So the cardiovascular benefits alone are obviously life-saving for some people and appropriate candidates. And these medications aren't right for everyone, and the decision to start them should involve careful consideration of individual circumstances. So understanding both the benefits and the challenges, let's talk about what this means for different types of people who might be considering these medications. So let's, who should consider the GLP-1s, and let's try to get some practical guidance here that if you have a client or have a family member or a loved one that is considering or is even already currently on a GLP-1, we can kind of determine, are they the right person that should be considering this medication? So the clear candidates, so based on the current research and the FDA approvals, there's a couple groups where the evidence for the benefit is the strongest, and these are the people that I would say 100% if you're interested in a GLP-1 and you're working closely with a doctor, individual that specializes in these things, then I think you're probably going to be given a green light pretty easily. And so the first one's going to be people with type 2 diabetes. And this is where there's the most robust long-term data available. So people with type 2 diabetes need better blood sugar control, especially if you could also benefit from the weight loss. The GLP-1 medications are oftenly going to be considered an excellent choice. And the cardiovascular and kidney protection benefits are also significant and additional benefits as well. So managing the blood sugar, getting the weight off, having the heart health for these people are all really, really good things to move their health in the right direction. I don't think anybody would probably argue with that front. Again, still think people should still improve their physical activity and their nutrition and lifestyle habits, but these people clearly have type 2 diabetes, and so we know that we need to try to get them away from type 2 diabetes because that is not something that is truly hereditary. It is lifestyle driven, and these GLP-1s can help get them, you know, out of being type 2 diabetic. Secondly, it's going to be people with obesity and cardiovascular disease, kind of going back to that same front that the SELECT trial specifically studied this population and found dramatic reductions in heart attack, strokes, cardiovascular diseases, and deaths. So for someone with obesity and already has an established heart disease of some kind or cardiovascular issues, the cardiovascular benefits alone are probably going to justify the treatment for these people as well. Again, trying to improve their quality of life and extend their life is an incredible, great thing that you can get from this medication. Now, people with obesity and multiple health conditions, like high blood pressure, sleep apnea, fatty liver disease, you're pre-diabetic, GLP-1 medications may help address multiple problems here as well simultaneously. So again, probably somebody that's going to be really high qualified to consider taking this medication. We're going to move into the next clump of individuals, and those would be like what I would call the emerging candidates. So recent research suggests that there's potential benefits for some of these groups, though the evidence is still somewhat developing. We still need a little more science behind this to back, and to justify it, but it is something worth considering. And that first group is going to be people with addiction issues. So the research on the reduced addiction behaviors is pretty compelling, but it's still relatively new. So it's not yet an approved use, but it's an area of active investigation. So maybe in the next couple of years, we'll see that this is used for addiction issues as well, which could be very beneficial, especially if we're talking about being addicted to very negative drugs and issues like that, or even like, some people are literally addicted to food. So this can come back to having multiple fronts on the health and fitness side as well. Also, the people that are at risk for dementia. So the cognitive protection here are interesting, but again, there needs to be more longer-term studies and research done to understand if medications are truly going to prevent or delay any kind of neurodegenerative diseases. Again, having a loved one that has recently passed away from this, my wife's grandma, I can completely understand why this would also, again, be something worth considering, seeing how the end stages of that went over the past year in real life for, you know, my wife and her grandma being somebody that I've been close to since she came into my life. I completely understand how this could be something that would be worth considering as well, especially if you start getting into the older populations. If there is benefits, then it is a medication that I'm sure many families would really want to consider. So let's talk about some important considerations before starting it. So if you know somebody is trying to start it, yourself, whatever, I think having some of these important considerations done before pulling the trigger are kind of important. So the first one is going to be weight loss goals and expectations. So these medications work best for people who need to lose significant amounts of weight, typically those with obesity. You can say what you want about obesity, but that's usually how most studies look at obesity and overweight. So people with a BMI over 30 or overweight with health conditions. So a BMI of about 27 or 28 with health conditions. So they may not be obese yet, but they're overweight, but they're already showing negative issues on the health front. I think those people are going to be better qualified. If you feel that you only need to drop like say 10 or 15 pounds, the risk benefit calculation is probably going to be a little bit different. May not be something that's worth considering. 10 to 15 pounds, well, I don't want to say is going to be an easy weight loss goal because again, it depends on who you are and what you've been through. But generally speaking, that would be much more manageable through a quality action of exercise and nutrition. But again, it all will depend. So I think if you clearly have a lot of weight to lose, then it becomes obviously much more understanding of why you would try to take it. Another important piece is going to be commitment to long-term treatment. Kind of was talking about this earlier, that the evidence suggests that they work best from a long-term perspective. I mentioned it's not going to be a 1 or 2 month stint and it's going to fix all your issues or help anything. People, you got to have a long-term buy-in here. So if you're looking for a short-term solution, GLP-1s are not going to be what you want. You might want to try other things. Again, going back to the lifestyle factors, I cannot remember that home enough. So that's something to look at it as well as say, hey, when you're considering these, say 6 to 12 months at a minimum, right? If you're not willing to do it for that long, that you might want to wait or find other alternatives in the time being until it is a good time to make that longer term commitment. And of course, another big issue just in general with healthcare is in general is the financial considerations. Can you afford these medications long term? So not only can you commit to staying on it and taking the medications, but can you even afford it for that long? And so discontinuing just from cost alone is obviously then going to probably lead to weight regain if you're taking it from the weight loss side. And it really, really stinks that in today's world that if medications are truly beneficial for health, that money is the end all be all of whether you can actually get the medications that you want. And I could go in a whole rant on this. Maybe it's a different podcast for a different day. But I do believe that preventative healthcare should be much more affordable and be rewarded. And this, at this point, GLP-1s is where it kind of has a, I guess the best way to put it is that we're controversial with is that, is it truly preventative? Because you're giving it to people that probably could have been preventative earlier on. And so now we're being reactive. And so that's kind of a catch-22 because clearly if it's got all these amazing health benefits, then that's being proactive from seeing these issues roar their ugly head later on, but you're clearly also in a bad enough place that you're needing to take the medications to get to that point. So it's a really sticky subject, I think, because of that right there, because we found something that can be beneficial, but is it truly preventative? It's kind of teetering the line, and I'll let you make that decision of whether you think it's actually truly preventative medication or if it's more reactive medication. There's also going to be the tolerance for the side effects. Again, we talked about, can you handle the issues, the GI side effects, the first 2 to 3 months, maybe even longer. And I think being educated, understanding, telling people, having real expectations of what that's like can then prepare people to be able to be ready for it. Now, I do think that there might be some medications that you can take to fight with the nausea and whatever. But again, the more that you can be aware of it, I guess, the better. Let's kind of talk about who should be cautious with these. Number one is going to be the people that have history of the pancreatitis, as we talked about. And while causation hasn't been proven exactly, many doctors are being cautious about prescribing the GLP-1s if they've got some kind of pancreatitis history in their family. Again, going back to the gastroparesis, so considering they slow that stomach emptying, it could worsen that. So if people already have this or they've shown issues with this before from other medications, then that's going to be something that doctors are going to kind of pump their brakes on. People that are planning a surgery, so these medications have to be stopped before procedures require the anesthesia because they slow the digestion and increase aspiration risk. So something that honestly I personally never would have thought of, but doing research, that is a group of people that are very serious. So kind of lumping this together is that people that have like gastric bypass surgery or any kind of like weight loss specific surgery, and they're taking GLP-1s, you can kind of see how this could kind of combine and combat each other to some degree. At least, you know, you don't want to have to stop taking that medication if you're seeing benefits. Maybe that's a surgery or operation that can be pushed later on if it happens to be in that same grouping. But also, more importantly, if you have a major surgery coming up for something else, something worth considering. I also want to talk about the importance of specialist care. And so from the recent research, people who receive GLP-1 prescriptions from doctors who specialize in obesity medicine or endocrinology are more likely to stay on treatment successfully than those prescribed by other specialists. And this makes sense because the specialists are more likely to do a couple things. Number one, they're going to set appropriate expectations about the side effects. They're going to be probably, I don't want to say they're going to be more upfront, but the obesity doctors are dealing with obesity every single day, where your normal doctor that you go to for your annual checkup, maybe not as much. They're also going to use proper dose escalation strategies. So I think they're going to try to be much more steady with how they're prescribing this and try to start as slow as possible and ramp you up. Where again, a regular doctor that's not prescribing as much may or may not be more aggressive or not as aggressive, depending upon what kind of adjustments you need to take. They're also going to find ongoing support for side effect management. That can be really huge, dealing with the side effects that you're getting from it. But they're also going to understand when these medications are and aren't appropriate. So they're going to be much more educated and specialized in it and being able to have a real conversation with an individual of, hey, you are a great candidate for this. I do think this will be greatly benefit your health. Or, hey, I think there are some other remedies that we should try first and see what kind of progress we can make on those fronts before we make this jump. I think those are both very good things. A very good doctor will always do that when it comes to almost any kind of medication. I think it's great to know the pros and the cons and what your other options are out there. If you go and ask a doctor for one thing and they're like, cool, and they sign off on it, to me, that's always been a red flag. I think they should try to educate on all the options available, especially when we're talking about your health and wellness. I think that's ultimately, you should be able to make an informed decision. It should not be about them making a prescription available, medication for them to make money on the back end of it. That is not a good thing. And as much as I hate to say it, there are many doctors that look at certain things that way, even if they don't want to admit it. They're going to pick the path of least resistance, especially if it happens to put a little bit more money in their pocket at the end of the day for maybe getting so many prescriptions or using so many different medications from a certain provider or brand. Not going to go into that discussion here today, but it is a real topic and it is something that does actually happen in our healthcare system, unfortunately. And again, going back to kind of the big crux here, the whole reason I kind of really made this episode is the role of lifestyle changes. These medications work best when combined with lifestyle modifications. End of story. They're not a replacement for healthy eating and physical activity. They're meant to be tools that can make these changes easier to implement and maintain and get the ball rolling, right? It's literally to, if anything, the way that I kind of look at it is if you taking it in 1 or 2 months in and you lose 10 or 15 pounds, it's motivation. Hey, I'm losing weight. Man, if I start eating a little bit better, start sleeping a little better, start going to the gym 2 times a week, going for a walk 1 day a week, doing things that I'm not already doing and doing things that are also going to promote my long-term health on top of taking the medication, that is the major win. So getting people to understand and think that GLP-1 medications as providing a biological assistance for the behavior changes that might otherwise be very difficult to sustain long term. That to me is the best way to approach this. This is your assistant, and it's going to help keep that needle almost like moving forward. Again, it's not to make an excuse, it's to aid in your process. And I think anybody would be a fool to do that. I mean, this is an over exaggeration, but creatine is essentially the same thing. You know, taking creatine can do a great job to help be an assistant of muscle growth and producing more power and being a stronger and better version of an athletic endeavor or whatever you're training for. But, you know, you're not going to rely on just the creatine to carry the weight. But this has clearly got much more powerful benefits than creatine does. So I think we should kind of look towards the future and kind of wrap up with what we can kind of expect from GLP-1s, maybe looking into the future, kind of what might be down the pipeline. And so the field of GLP-1s and related medications is moving stupid fast. There's no denying that. I mean, I'm not on social media as much anymore. I try to limit that for a number of reasons, but I feel like every single time I get on my phone, whether it be Facebook or Instagram, again, I'm not on TikTok very much, YouTube, things talking about Ozempic and GLP-1s is all over there. I get ads for people selling GLP-1 training programs. And this is a side tangent here, but that's bullshit. That's marketing bullshit. People, there is no GLP-1 workout. Does not exist. There's nothing that's going to change because you're on a GLP-1. Don't let anybody sell you that shit. Now, those people that are taking GLP-1s are probably way more likely to be beginners when it comes to health, fitness, and strength training. So those programs should be a beginner program, but they're putting GLP-1 program in front of that because someone's like, I'm on GLP-1 and I need a workout program. I don't know what to do. I'm going to buy that program, right? It's purely marketing. There's nothing special about a GLP-1 health and fitness routine. I would say the basic way to start, if you happen to listen to this or know somebody that's trying to get into it, 2 full body strength training sessions a week and 1 day of some kind of cardiovascular activity, whether it be going for a walk or maybe taking a slight jog on the treadmill or riding the bike or the elliptical, whatever your cardiovascular implement is. Again, to me, it doesn't even matter for these people if they're taking these medications and they are beginners. 20 to 30 minutes of that cardiovascular activity is going to check that box to get them going. At least get them started for the first 2 or 3 months. I think, one, it's very maintainable. It's very realistic. It's not a huge time commitment. I mean, we're talking 30 to 45 minutes in the gym and 20 to 30 minutes walk. We're talking 2-ish hours of physical activity a week is what we're adding. When you go from doing none, that's going to be a lot when you start pairing it in with taking these medications and if they make any kind of meaningful nutrition or lifestyle habits in terms of sleeping, hydration, and all that kind of stuff. So, side tangent there. I apologize about that. But that's for sure what really needs to happen on the GLP-1 workout front from the beginner side. We're seeing some development of oral versions. There's currently only 1 oral GLP-1 available, longer acting formulations and combination drugs that target multiple hormone pathways simultaneously. The triple agonists like the retatrutide, which activate GLP-1, GIP, and glucagon receptors are showing even more dramatic weight loss results in trials. Like I said, up to 24% body weight reduction. These could become available in the next few years, kind of being a growth and stepping stone in these medications. And researchers are also investigating GLP-1 drugs for conditions we haven't talked about, like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, peripheral artery disease, and other variations of those diseases. The breadth of potential applications continue to expand as we understand more about where GLP-1 receptors exist in the body and what they do. So let me distill what we've learned today into actual insights for you, your clients, a loved one, friend, family member, somebody you know. First off, these medications are clearly representing a genuine breakthrough in modern day medicine. There's no doubt about it. Just the results that people are seeing are just speaking for themselves. The weight loss, the cardiovascular protection, the benefits for the brain health, and even potential fighting addiction makes them unlike any other medication that we've seen before. We all remember back in the day, like, hey, if you could take a pill to just lose weight, would you do it? This is damn near that. Now, it's clearly long term, but I mean, to have medications this powerful and this successful for these particular populations and improving people's health, that is a true win for modern medicine in today here in 2025 and beyond. Secondly, and also as I've kind of beat to death here, they're not going to be magic bullets though. There's clearly right now already high discontinuation rates, significant side effects for many people, and the cost issues might mean they're not exactly for everybody. So success is going to require careful patient selection, appropriate expectations, and long-term commitment. They got to be prescribed to the right people, trying to make the right informed decisions. They're given the right information and expectations up front, and we're talking to them about long-term commitment of getting the most from these medications because of that. Thirdly, the decision should be individualized. The age, health conditions, financial situations, side effects, and the treatment goals all matter for each individual person. It's not a decision to take based on social media or celebrity endorsements, which we are seeing on every commercial right now in sports. I'm trying to think when I watched a sporting event in the past couple of weeks that I've not seen like a Wegovy or an Ozempic or some kind of GLP-1 advertisement. Right. I mean, they are absolutely everywhere, but we should not be making these decisions because of the advertising. The advertising should be bringing awareness really towards the health benefits, if I'm being honest. And I mean, they do talk about that a little bit, but talk to us about the information with your healthcare specialist, provider, and make sure that the treatment that you're getting is actually going to be individualized based upon all the things that you have been going on in your life or your client's life, loved ones, what have you. Fourth, if you're considering these medications, work with the right doctor. Get a specialist in obesity-based medicine or endocrinology who are more likely to help you succeed than doctors who occasionally prescribe the drugs like your regular family practitioner. Not knocking the family practitioner. I have nothing against them. But when it comes to medicine, especially stuff that's like newer like this and that is more groundbreaking, you want to get the most educated people in your corner if you're going to be on a medication like this for like a year to make that kind of drastic lifestyle change and improve your health. I don't think it's something that you want to fumble around with. I think it's going to set you up on the right foot to get going early on. And so finding that specialist, in my opinion, would be step number one. Once you've kind of committed to, hey, this is the medication for me or my loved one, let's go find a specialist that does this. This is their thing now. I think this is going to probably eventually being like a specialist area for the obesity-based medicine doctors and endocrinologists. Is their main thing is to help people lose their weight and how to monitor and use their GLP-1s effectively. You'll basically go see your normal practitioner, your family doctor, and then they're going to say, hey, I got a specialist for this. Or you can ask them, hey, I need to go to a specialist for this. And I think that's the route to go. Fifth, kind of already touched on this one again, but got to think long-term. Again, this seems to be the long-term based treatment medication. It is not going to be a 1-3 month stint. Make sure that if this is a medication that you're wanting to use or you know somebody wanting to use, you preach the long-term commitment piece. I think that should go for anything health, fitness, lifestyle related. You got to take a long-term buy-in. There are no quick fixes when it comes to health, fitness, and wellness. There just are not. There are things that can give you some quick temporary relief and start addressing some underlying issues that can speed things up. But in health and fitness world, most things are going to be long-term commitment. This medication, especially from the weight loss and the health benefits, is going to be a long-term approach. And I want to talk about the big picture here. And so I think what we're actually seeing might be the beginning of a completely new era of modern medicine, one where we can effectively treat obesity and its related conditions with medications that work with rather than against our natural human biology. So the discovery that these medications affect brain health, addiction, multiple organ system address multiple organ systems suggests we're just scratching the surface of what the potential of GLP-1s really could be. But obviously, as with anything powerful, tool-related, medication-related, health-related, they need to be used thoughtfully and appropriately for the right people, and people need to be educated, especially when we start talking about medications. Again, I'm not a doctor. This is not my cup of tea. This is not my specialty, right? I'm doing the research. I'm reading some of the statistics here for you today, summarize some of the stuff that I found, giving you as much of the most basic information. So if you want to go elsewhere to get more information on GLP-1s and this kind of medication and this kind of treatment, hopefully this can get you the stepping stone to make those decisions. Consider this the step to get you going or your clients or your family members in the right direction. My final thoughts for you today, I want you to take away one thing from this episode, and that's that GLP-1 medications are neither miracle cures nor dangerous drugs, right? They're powerful medication that can provide significant benefits for the right people in the right circumstances. And that's almost all medication in today's modern world is that key line right there, the right people in the right circumstance can see amazing benefit from this. The key is having the realistic expectations evolve, know what's coming down the pipeline, understanding the benefits and risks, as with any medication, but in particular for this one, and making informed decisions based on individual circumstances rather than the headlines of what's on social media and what's floating around right now. You know, I even feel bad myself making a podcast episode on GLP-1s because to me, it almost gives the vibe that it's clickbaity. It's not. But in my field, when I'm seeing all this information come to me, and again, I'm not taking these medications. I don't need to take these medications. I don't have these issues. Do I think there's people in my life that may need them eventually? Possibly. I think me now being better educated, I can now point them in the right direction. Or if somebody comes to me having done this research and learning more about these medications, I now feel better to steer people in the right directions. And not only has this done a good job for my own education, as of this podcast, again, the Thirst for More is to help you, a coach, trainer, individual, athlete, help your client, help a loved one, maybe even yourself make those right decisions. And so as the health and fitness field continues to evolve, stay informed through reliable sources. And remember that the best treatment decision is always one made in partnership with your healthcare provider who understands both the science and your individual needs. Do not make this decision purely based off social media, celebrities, or anything you happen to be seeing on the TV, what have you. So that's going to wrap up today's episode on GLP-1 medications. I hope this episode has given you a comprehensive, balanced understanding of what these drugs and medications can and what they can't do, and based on the latest scientific evidence that I could dig up. So if you happen to find this information helpful or took one awesome piece away, do me a favor, subscribe to the Thirst for More podcast, my podcast over on YouTube. It's underneath my name, B. Smitley, but I got a whole section of just all the Thirst for More podcast episodes in one place from video format. And if you are listening over on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, anywhere you happen to enjoy your podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you leave me a 5-star review, or even better, share this on social media, share it with a friend. That all really helps me out. I really appreciate it. It's completely free. It does absolutely nothing. Just takes about 3 seconds out of your day. So I'll be keeping my own eye out for more GLP-1 information just in general, because doing this homework for this episode enough is a lot of information for me to just grasp and understand. And there are more benefits there than I even knew about. And I think that's really a positive thing for the health and fitness community. But I also know, again, it is kind of a taboo subject of some people will call it lazy. Some people like, oh, you should actually just eat better. And, you know, it's just a calorie in, calorie out equation. But there are serious issues that people are having from a health perspective that they can see major benefits from. And if it gets people healthier and moving in the right direction, and they're willing to pair this with doing the right lifestyle steps, to me, I really think GLP-1s can be right, again, if they are picked for the right individual in the right circumstances. So again, Do me a favor, hit that like button if you're on subscribe. Leave me a comment if this was an episode you happen to enjoy. Again, subscribe if you're not already subscribed to the YouTube channel, completely free. And leave me those ratings if you would, or share with a friend. Those all really help me out. Again, I appreciate you tuning in for today's episode of the Thirst for More podcast, and I'll see you at the next episode.
Thanks for listening to Thirst for More podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at bsmitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.